It's The Record. I'm Marcy Silman. Today we start a series of conversations with McGinn and Murray that focus on the broad themes of mobility and transportation, public safety and justice, and to kick off the series, growth and development. Seattle planners are starting the process of updating the city's comprehensive plan. I asked Mike McGinn his top goals for the city in that planning process.
I think we want to see people of all incomes. We want to see people of all backgrounds. And we want to see them all connected to opportunity. And those connections come from our schools, libraries, parks, transit system, and the ability to connect with each other in the community.
So when you think about where you're going to funnel growth, they used to be called urban centers, all those transit-oriented development. We have a lot of names for where we put the bigger buildings, where we try to build affordable housing. How do you imagine incorporating the community's input into that decision-making process?
We've been doing that already. In fact, over the last 4 years, we've been in 18 different neighborhoods doing planning. And we've really worked to try to expand and be more exclusive in our planning efforts. I speak about all the town halls that I do as an individual, bring departments with me. And what we look at is try to do focused planning in an area where growth is occurring and talk to the community about what they want. And it's the entire community. So, for example, we've hired public outreach liaisons. These are individuals from our ethnic and immigrant communities who are knowledgeable about the community, not people that are knowledgeable about the planning. They can learn about the planning and the big issues, but they go to the community where they are. They help bring the community to us, help bring us to the community. We're also looking at, you know, Capitol Hill with the light, all of the light rail, whether it's in the valley, going north, U District, Northgate, Roosevelt. And then we have neighborhoods like, you know, Ballard, which have taken large amounts of growth and need more transit. And we're doing a very significant planning process there as well, where we're bringing everyone together.
I know that in the North End, where people have always been more vocal or traditionally been more vocal, that there has been more outcry about where and more organized opposition to some of the ideas. I'm thinking about the Roosevelt neighborhood in particular.
You know, that issue really came down to when you first of all, the Roosevelt neighborhood planning folks and those neighborhood folks were deeply engaged. They helped get the light rail station into the neighborhood itself instead of over by I-5. And ultimately, the biggest difference of opinion was whether a certain number of blocks should be 45 feet or 65 feet, which at the end of the day actually wasn't that far apart from each other. And I did lean towards the 65 because we're making this big investment in light rail and having the capacity for a few more people to live there. Plus, it was more likely that that property would be developed more quickly at 65 than 45, and it's blighted right now.
There is substantial new development down in southeast Seattle, but not at the kind of height limits we're talking about in the North End. How will you encourage private development in areas that traditionally haven't taken as much?
Even in the previous boom era, before the Great Recession, there was no new development in much of southeast that was private market driven. It was mainly driven by subsidized projects. And neighborhoods have a concern about that as well. One is the quality of the schools. When you have good schools, make a big difference in whether or not people want to move into a neighborhood. So our Families and Education Levy is focused on supporting the schools that need help the most. Public safety is another issue, and we've really worked on building stronger ties between the police and the community there as well. We're also partnering with Sound Transit to help. We did it on Capitol Hill successfully. Take the property they bought as part of their building the rail line and partner with them. We gave them a little more height in exchange for more affordable housing to get property into the marketplace and get affordable housing near transit.
I want to jump over to the Soto neighborhood. At some point, Chris Hansen may manage to get a basketball, an NBA team, to come to Seattle. And we are looking right now. I think we're in the environmental impact statement review process of whether an arena will be built on the property he owns in the Soto neighborhood or not. I know that there's been significant concern from the Port of Seattle in particular about the industrial zone property in Soto. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about how you balance the development that is moving into the south downtown area with the traditional industry that depends on that property to do its work.
First, let's just start off by saying we're fortunate that we have multiple strong economic sectors in the city. And we have a thriving downtown, which attracts a lot of tourists and visitors immediately next to a port and a manufacturing industrial sector as well, and maritime. And I want to pull these apart just a little bit. You know, the port is about moving the freight in and out and from the port to the freeways. And we work with them on identifying corridors and investing in them for that purpose. The maritime depends on the water access, and we worked with them on the Shoreline Management Act update and making sure we're flexible enough in our regulatory work so that they can do well. And we've done that. Harley Marine has a new building that we were flexible in their adaptation, and there was no controversy of the Shoreline Management Act update. The industrial properties are somewhat different when you get the warehouse properties. You know, the big companies like big spaces with big parking lots. And so you see a lot of that down in Kent and Auburn. So how we reinvent and reinvigorate our traditional, you know, warehousing and light manufacturing areas south of the arena is important. While I am a supporter of the arena, I've also been a very strong supporter of preserving our manufacturing and industrial base and have worked closely with the businesses down there to support them.
What about through the other parts of the city? And I'm thinking particularly sort of South Lake Union and Ballard along the Ship Canal. At this point, we have a knowledge-based industry that's developing in South Lake Union, which you have supported. How does that coexist with the traditional blue-collar industries that built the city?
Well, first of all, the traditional blue-collar industries also have to be innovative and creative. They're competing in a world economy. And we have one of the strongest maritime sectors in the world. We build boats that we export all over the world. So they're innovators, too. So I don't think they're incompatible. I think they're compatible. You know, the challenge is they do feel the concerns about the pressure for residential development near them or on. There's always people coming forward with some plan or another to convert a pier or something to residential. And I don't support that. I believe that the water access is so critical to the maritime, and we have lots of land zone for residential. We have lots of land zone for office. Let's preserve our industrial lands, particularly that have water access.
That's incumbent Seattle Mayor Mike McGinn. We invited both Mayor Mike McGinn and his challenger Ed Murray into our studios last week to talk about three major areas: growth and development, mobility and transportation, and justice and public safety. Most recently, downtown merchants and other observers have criticized the city for an increase in criminal or other uncivil behaviors, particularly in the downtown core. I asked Mayor McGinn how his administration and his police force are addressing street disorder.
We've been convening something called the Center City Roundtable, and it brought together the businesses, the residents, the social service agencies, as well as relevant government agencies. You can't do this in too broad a brushstrokes. You actually have to look at what the specific issues are. So there are people that are homeless who aren't doing anything wrong, and that's an issue of services. We have a lot of individuals who have substance abuse issues, and the criminal justice system doesn't deal effectively with them. The war on drugs hasn't been effective, so we're expanding something called law enforcement assisted diversion, which is expanding drug treatment. We are 50th in the nation in mental health beds, which means that we feel the effect of people who are, you know, decompensating and on our streets. Don't want to stigmatize this. There are lots of people with mental health issues who are fine, who have friends, family, neighbors, and treat. There's a very small number who don't. And we're looking at trying to develop a new funding source and more wraparound services for those individuals. Then there are people who just don't follow the rules. And they get tickets and they don't pay tickets. And we're working with our city attorney to responsibly prosecute those that just don't follow the rules. And under his leadership, the city just stopped prosecuting those at all. And, you know, maybe we probably did too much prosecution of that in the past, but now the pendulum's swung too far to where we're doing none. And I think we need to do some. Those that won't accept services, just won't follow the rules, there has to be a consequence, because our officers have to have the authority to do something about people who drink in public, you know, urinate in public, or won't abide by basic rules.
The other thing that has happened, which does involve the police department, is the work that's going on under the consent decree that the city of Seattle has entered into with the U.S. Justice Department. It seems from the outside that things are progressing. Is that true?
Yeah, I think they are. And in fact, I think that that's one of the, you know, it was a rocky road to get there. And from what I know from speaking to other mayors, it's always a rocky road because this is one of the toughest issues we face. I mean, for decades, our communities of color have complained about inequitable treatment from the police. And, you know, so what we have now is we have civil rights leaders, community leaders at the table with police officers, the police union, the command staff, as well as other community leaders on the Community Police Commission. And everyone's working together, and the Police Officers Union dropped their lawsuit against it, which is great. You know, again, it was a rocky road to get there, but it always is. But look at where we are in that we have people now focused on it. And it'll be in the public eye because the Community Police Commission keeps it there. This isn't something that's now just going to happen behind closed doors somewhere.
If you're reelected, what kind of police chief will you seek out?
We're looking for, you know, the qualities you seek are, there's challenges for any chief to meet all of the qualities we're going to set out. They have to be innovative and creative. They have to be dedicated to harm reduction as a philosophy, not just, you know, law enforcement, because so many of the challenges we face are social challenges, not, you know, other challenges. They have to have the trust of the police and respect of the police officers as well as community leaders. So that's a tall order. But that's what we'll be looking for.
You have a police chief, an interim in place right now. Will he keep the job if you're reelected until you are satisfied that you found Gandhi to fill his shoes? Because that sounds like what you're looking for. Yeah.
Well, I know. And I think, you know, when I ran 4 years ago, that there was this issue of, you know, it's very easy when you're running to say, oh, well, the solution is in finding a great chief. But we need to be really clear. This is an issue that will require the engagement of the community, the police officers, the political leaders, you know, the community leaders themselves. So a chief is a piece of that puzzle. And Chief Pugel has indicated he wants to apply for the job. And so far, he's been scoring good marks with the community leaders and the police officers and the monitor as well. So I think we're really fortunate to have Jim doing the work he's doing right now. And I'm glad he's going to apply. But, of course, we're going to do a national search, and we're going to search for the best possible candidates, and he'll have to compete on an equal footing with everyone else.
Seattle Mayor Mike McGinn is seeking a second term in office. It's The Record. I'm Marcy Silman. Transportation is one of the most pressing issues that faces both Seattle and the Puget Sound region in general. Incumbent Mayor Mike McGinn has made alternatives to single-occupancy vehicles one of the cornerstones of his first term in office. I asked Mayor McGinn what he saw as his top achievements.
What we see is that the amount of transit, walking, and biking has gone up. In fact, we're one of five cities in the nation where a majority of people don't take single-occupancy vehicles to work, one of only five. So that's pretty amazing. You know, we're in the midst of an historic era where people want to live in cities again. And we are trying to change the emphasis of our capital spending on transportation from huge highway mega projects to transit, walking, biking, local streets. And locally, we're working on that with our own resources. And I also worked with 47 mayors across the state to build a coalition for better funding for transit and better funding for local streets as well. So I would say that our focus is really thinking about mobility not as one major project's going to solve our problems, but a series of small projects, neighborhood-based projects, will make places better for walking and biking and transit. And collectively, we're laying the groundwork for an expansion of rail throughout the city with the adoption of our transit master plan.
There's a new bicycle master plan as well. As far as I understand, it's unfunded at this point, correct?
Well, I think that's true for much of our transportation work. Unfortunately, we've had 20 years of neglect or more of allowing, you know, deep maintenance backlogs to occur. So funding is an issue. But we do have a bicycle master plan coming up. But, you know, every time we get to redo a corridor, for example, we're redoing the 23rd Street corridor now, which goes through the central district, several central district business districts there, local business districts. And we worked with the community, we're not just going to go in and repave the street. We worked with the community. We'll make the sidewalk wider because that's what the community wants there. It's very narrow. We'll give transit a little more priority, and we'll build a greenway, a bike greenway adjacent to it. So every time we can do a major corridor project, we can do that.
How do we pay for those projects?
In those projects, we're paying for them out of general fund as well as state and federal grants in particular. Getting a local funding option from the state legislature would really help us with that as well, and a Bridging the Gap ballot measure will help as well. That's up for renewal. Another thing we've done is our traffic safety cameras, which is I would like no one to speed because people should drive 20 or less near our schools. But if people are going to speed, they will get ticketed. And we will put all of that money into making it safer for kids to walk to school. That's $14 million over the next 2 years. That's real money in our budget.
So what I'm hearing you say is it's not an effort to discourage people from driving single occupancy vehicles, but encouraging them into other modes of mobility.
Yes. Let me be really clear about this. 10 years ago, 43% of the trips to downtown in the peak hour were single occupancy vehicle in the peak hour. Today it's 34. If it were still 43% with the growth we've had, we'd need 12 more lanes and we'd need 10 square blocks of 10-story high parking garages. This is not ideological. It's geometrical. We cannot accommodate our job and housing growth with single occupancy vehicles. It cannot be done. So this is an economic issue. It's a health issue. Mm-hmm. And it's an environmental issue. But it's ultimately, it's a quality of life issue for people because you have to give people other choices to get around.
You mentioned a few minutes ago the taxing authority. That comes from the state. I know that King County is desperately seeking the authority to put to the voters the option to raise taxes to fund Metro buses. Otherwise, we're facing 17% cuts, I think, in service.
Yes. Here's what happens. It's the same thing that happened a couple of years ago with the roads and transit ballot measure. What the state legislature does is that in order to give, and they've said it to me directly, is we want to starve Seattle because we want you to come to the table hungry so you will support our highway expansion projects. And frankly, that has been made far worse by the loss of the Senate to the Republicans. So basically, they hold our transit money hostage to help build their, you know, climate-busting, climate-changing highways. And that's the challenge we face right now. I've come around to the opinion that I'd like the city or the county to just figure out, you know, maybe use a property tax to do it, to save Metro, because I want to set the hostages free. And they're going to do the same thing to Sound Transit expansion next. And they're doing this at the same time. They're building new highways at the same time as they're not maintaining our existing highways. For example, I-5 through Seattle is at the end of its useful life. We're talking billions of dollars to replace I-5. It's essentially a series of bridges. And all we see from the state legislature is new mega projects that they want to see funded. I think both at the city level and at the state level, there should be a real focus on two things. One is long-term bond measures to rebuild our roads and bridges. I think that's one piece. And then the other piece is new investments in transit. And those should be our capital priorities as a state and as a region and as a city.
Incumbent Seattle Mayor Mike McGinn seeks a second term in office. It's The Record. I'm Marcy Silman.